Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Piki mai kake mai, I'm Alison Balance and welcome to this Our Changing World podcast from RNZ. Concussion is very much on Melanie Bussey's mind. Not because she's had a blow to the head, but because she's interested in sports injuries and the effects of concussion on, for instance, rugby players. There's a growing body of evidence that rugby players are at high risk of concussion and that repeated concussion has various negative effects on brain function. In the worst cases, cumulative damage from a number of concussions can result in a condition known as chronic traumatic encephalopathy, or CTE. It leads to speech and memory problems and shares features with Alzheimer's disease. Melanie is director of the Motion Analysis Laboratory at the University of Otago. Her area of research is clinical biomechanics. And when I joined her and student Jaden Pinfold in the lab, as they set up for an experiment they're using to test rugby players, I asked her to explain what biomechanics is.
Biomechanics is a combination of physics, mechanical engineering, and anatomy, essentially, to study movement. Obviously, in physical education, we're interested in sport, mostly, and sport-related movement. And for me, I'm a clinical biomechanist, so I'm interested in injury and pain and how it affects movement.
Generally, I think if I had an injury, it would stop me moving as freely as I might normally do.
Yeah, definitely. My research interest, actually, is in how injury affects movement patterns and how our movement system adapts to injury, particularly chronic injury or recurrent injury patterns. And so we're looking at mechanisms that may be related to the chronicity, so how long the injury or the pain lasts, and to recurrent patterns, so why some people will get the same injury multiple times. Jaden's study, for example, we look at recurrent concussion and what might be a mechanism for having that same injury multiple times.
Now tell me a bit about concussion. It's been in the news quite a bit recently in relation to sport, and I'm thinking of things like American football, for instance.
Yeah, American football definitely kicked off the concussion craze with their class action lawsuit a couple of years ago, where the former players who had suffered the symptoms of chronic repetitive concussion sued the National League for their chronic long-term injury. And so the league has taken it very seriously and invested a lot of money and time into researching concussion and the symptoms of chronic and recurrent concussions in that population. And they're doing a lot to try to protect their athletes. But what it's done is it's sent shockwaves through the community, the sporting community, to try to, everyone now is looking at their sport. And obviously here we don't have American football, but we have rugby, which is also a contact sport and has a very high concussion risk for their athletes, and we have no idea what the long-term consequences are for rugby players. We haven't done that long-term research yet, but we're certainly now doing a lot more work with those athletes to understand the mechanisms and risks in that population.
We'll come back to concussion in a second. In the meantime, I'm curious about what Jaden is up to over here, so I might pop over and see what he's doing. So what's going on here?
So I'm currently preparing Lorenz's skin for surface EMG.
EMG is measuring the electrical impulse from a muscle, which tells us how active that muscle is. And so we put electrodes on the skin to measure that electrical impulse.
So Lorenzo, you're our willing participant today.
Yeah, I am indeed.
This is a follow-on study from some others that we did in the last year. We did a couple of pilot studies looking at the effect of recurrent concussion on head acceleration. So we know that the injury that we call concussion occurs from strains in the brain due to the rotational acceleration of the head during impacts. And they know they've done studies, modeling studies on the brain to see how the brain's tissue changes shape during those impacts. And that's what causes the symptoms that we see, the neurological symptoms that we see that we call concussion. So fuzzy thinking and lack of coordination and those sorts of things that we see immediately following that kind of impact. So from the previous studies we did, we found that people who had recurrent concussions had higher head accelerations during rugby-related type impacts than those who had no history of concussion, which definitely tells us that something's changed neurologically to cause them to have potentially less control of their head during the impacts. So this study is a follow-on where we've kind of simplified everything down to just look at the neck muscles and how they're controlling the head during a smaller impact than what we would see in a rugby tackle, but a similar type of impact that we would see in a rugby tackle. So we're trying to see whether people who have those recurrent histories have poor control maybe of those muscles, which might cause them to have less control of the head during those impacts.
So it could be that having one bout of concussion means you're more prone to get another one because you've got less head control? Is that what you're thinking?
That's exactly what we're thinking. And what we saw in the data, we're just writing this paper, so it's hot off the presses at the moment. What we saw in the data was that as you had more concussion history, so from 0 to 1, there was an increase in head acceleration during impact. And then from 1 to 2 to 3, there was an even more significant increase in rotation. And it was like almost a linear increase. So the more concussions you had, the higher head acceleration was during the impact. So there's definitely a relationship that we see anyway in our research that shows that there is likely a lower control. So we're carrying on with this project so that this one, like I said, we're isolating that down to those muscles to see whether or not that is the thing that's maybe causing the lack of control.
So what muscles in particular are we talking about? What are these ones that are at the base of our neck?
Oh, these are the muscles that every first-year anatomy student loves to hear about, actually. The one on the neck that you just see Jaden preparing underneath Lorenz's ear is called the sternocleidomastoid. Everyone loves to say that. It attaches at the mastoid process behind the ear and then down on the clavicle and the sternum. So it's the sternocleidomastoid.
Gotcha.
And it's responsible for rotating the head. And if you contract it bilaterally on both sides, it stiffens the neck on the front. And then the back muscles on the back of the neck that we're looking at are the splenius capitis, which is a small muscle sort of at the base of the neck, at the base of the head, that helps control the neck rotation, posterior rotation. And then the upper trapezius muscle, which is in the shoulder, which also helps control, particularly if it's contracted bilaterally, stiffness around the neck. And so if you're going to have an impact, they've done these studies in sort of bigger impacts like car crashes and things. These are the muscles that tend to sort of stiffen to control the head during sort of whiplash type injuries. And it's the same mechanism in if you're hitting a rugby player as if you're hitting a car. So we're looking at those same muscles to see how they would be helping to control the head.
So Jaden is now sticking on little electrodes. So there's going to be how many of those? 6?
Yep. So there's one electrode per muscle, and we're looking at it at that muscle on each side of the head.
So for the study, does it matter whether your participants have a history of concussion? Are you looking for people who have varied histories?
We in this study, we are looking for a various history of concussion. So we want those who've had none and those who've had multiple. So we can look at how it would differ amongst those people. And we also track how long ago those concussions were. And our previous study was really interesting because we had some athletes who had a fair amount of time since their last concussion, some 1 or 2 years, and they still had higher rotations even several years later. So the neurological effects, the cumulative neurological effects that we see, seem to be more long-lasting than we would expect when the immediate symptoms are gone, usually within 7 to 10 days, 14 days usually at the latest outset. So there's definitely something happening underlying there that we don't quite understand yet.
Am I allowed to ask what your concussion history is?
Well, I've had no concussions, actually, yeah.
Okay, so you should have good, solid neck muscles.
Well, you'd hope so for a skinny guy like me. Yeah. Yeah.
So you've stuck all your electrodes on, Jaden. What are you about to attach now?
This is just the box that sends the signal from the electrode to the computer. And so during the experiment, we're just interested in both the amplitude of the muscle activity and then the onset of that muscle activity.
How big it is and how quickly it happens.
Yeah, exactly. And I guess there's trials where the participant will have their eyes open and trials where the participant will have their eyes closed. So the device will come down and perturbate their body or make impact with their chest. And we're interested in the muscle activity during that trial. When their eyes are open, they'll have voluntary activation of their neck muscles. And so we expect the muscle activity to happen before the impact, whereas when their eyes are closed, they won't be anticipating the impact, so the muscle activity will occur after the impact. And this occurs through reflexive muscle activation patterns. So we're sort of just interested whether concussion history has an effect on the brain's processing or the reflexive muscle activation.
And what have you got there, Melanie?
This is the impact sensor. So this is the sensor that they use in NFL football, in soccer, in rugby union and rugby league to measure head accelerations during practices and games. So we have the same technology we're using here, and it just attaches to the mastoid process behind the ear, that bone on the skull behind the ear, and it will measure the rotational acceleration of the head during the impact so that we can see how well-controlled it may or may not be.
You're looking more and more like a cyborg there, Lorenzo.
Yeah, I definitely feel it. My rotation's definitely impaired now as well. Kind of just keep my neck straight, my head straight.
So I'm currently just setting up the perturbation device. So it has a 1.5-metre arm that sort of has a pivot point at one end, and then at the other end there's two thrusters that are padded with high-density foam. So we have 10% of the participant's body mass loaded up on the device, and then it's pulled back 0.8 metres to a magnetic release. The participant sort of stands in front of the device and the device is released and it comes down, swings down and hits them in the chest.
So the momentum of the swing will be scaled to that person's size and mass. So it will be the same type of impact for every person.
And how does this get recorded? Obviously it's getting recorded on the sensors, Jaden. Are you also going to film it?
Yeah, so we're filming it with a high-speed camera that's recording at 2,000 hertz.
Your normal standard video camera captures at 60 hertz, so this one is at 2,000. So we're capturing much more data at much quicker rate. So we're more likely to catch that high acceleration of the head than we would with a 60 hertz camera.
So it's a modern equivalent of a crash test dummy camera?
Absolutely, yes.
So you're being carefully lined up, Lorenzo, so you have to stand in a particular spot, in a particular stance?
I am indeed.
So feet apart. And where are you going to get hit? Whereabouts is the
looks
impact
like going
to be?
It's going to hit me right on the pecs by the looks of it. I'm a bit nervous, but I'm ready to go.
Yeah, we're all set up, ready to go. Cool, it's going to come at you.
So how was that?
Oh, it was all right. I think I knocked off my feet a little bit there, but you can see it coming, so it's not much of a fright.
So you had your eyes open for that
one? Yeah, I had my eyes open for that one. Yeah, saw it coming, kind of tense, kind of prepared myself for it, and then when it hit, I was ready, I guess. But I guess we'll see when it closed my eyes, it'll be a bit of a shock, I imagine.
So it was interesting, his head actually went quite a long way forward mm-hmm. when he was pushed yep. on the chest.
So that's exactly the kind of rotational acceleration that you see when you get like a tackle type to the body. That force of the body on the body actually causes an impulse to the head to rotate in the opposite direction, like whiplash in a car crash situation. And that's exactly the mechanism that we think causes the concussion.
Is it just that rotational aspect of the movement that's the problem, or is it does the brain actually connect with the skull?
I think there's still a lot we don't quite understand about it. There have been a lot of brain modeling studies where they've done finite element analyses of the tissue of the brain to see how it responds to linear and angular rotations. The brain tissue itself is a very complex tissue because unlike our muscles and bones and joints, which are very linearly organized, so they're organized mostly in sort of an axial fashion. They run up and down for the most part to handle loads that run up and down. But our brain tissue is quite knotted and twisted and runs in lots of different directions. And so we know that most of the tissues of our body respond to loads in a very linear fashion because that's the way they're designed. And they respond to loads, compressive loads and tensile loads that act along that axial pathway because that's the way they're designed. Whereas the brain, because it's such a complex design, it's very hard to understand exactly how it will respond to a load. The first studies that were done on brain tissue were done back in the 50s and 60s on monkeys, and they found that the magnitude of the acceleration and the duration of the acceleration definitely affected the brain tissue and created sort of injury to the brain. So we know that definitely size and magnitude of impact is important, but more recent data has shown us that the linear acceleration doesn't cause as much deformation of the brain tissue as the rotational acceleration. So right now, the thinking is that rotational acceleration is actually more problematic for concussion-type injury mechanism than the linear acceleration. And there are, again, a lot of nuances about whether there are magnitudes of threshold that are worse or better, and whether at some magnitudes linear plays more of a part than rotational. But definitely for the most part, the kinds of rotation that we see in sport-related impacts, rotational is the one that causes more brain strain and likely the major mechanism for concussion symptoms.
Now, Jaden, can you tell me what happened in terms of Lorenzo's muscles?
So here on the computer screen, we have the muscle activity from Lorenzo's muscles during that trial. And you can sort of see that there's pre-activation before the device impacts his body.
So here, because we had the eyes open and Lorenz could see and he had that visual feedback, he was able to prepare his muscles well before impact. One of the things we expect to see in some athletes who've had high concussion histories is perhaps that they're not as good at planning for that impact, and so they might have delayed muscle response when the visual information is available to them.
But Lorenzo's is good and fast.
He's sweet as.
Good reflexes there, Lorenzo?
Pretty happy with that, yeah.
So stage two.
Stage two. Eyes closed, earmuffs on.
So in this stage, we remove all visual and auditory information. So he's wearing a headset that Jaden's going to play some music so that he cannot hear anything that's happening outside. So he can't hear the mechanical release of the perturbation device. And his eyes will be closed, so he won't receive any visual feedback as to when the device is moving toward him.
And so what's your expectation that he might get jerked more and pushed further back?
So we might see a larger rotation. Likely that's going to be because his muscles won't have the time to pre-plan and prepare. So what we typically see are the muscles will be delayed in the response, and that's because we're now looking at pure reflex action. So now the muscles are going to activate due to the actual impact rather than preparing for the impact. And so that's a pure reflex response, which comes from a lower process in the brain further down into the spinal column.
So Lorenz can't hear or see anything. He's waiting. Oh, he certainly got knocked back a bit more that time. So you definitely didn't hear anything, you definitely didn't see
I definitely
see
didn't hear or see. My eyes were like squinting at the thought of it coming. That was definitely worse than the first time, yeah. I don't really like that anticipation that it's coming. At least in rugby you might actually know that the tackle was coming, but yeah. Yeah, we'll see my video. I feel like I'll be all over the show.
I was pleased to see you had a mattress just in case you did topple
over. Yeah, I think I nearly tripped over the mattress.
Looking at what his muscles did.
Looking at his muscle activity, you can see the white line.
So there was absolutely no anticipation.
No anticipation.
And these bottom muscles reacted much more this time than they did last time.
Yeah, and what happens if you can't prepare and plan for an oncoming perturbation or impact, then the response is much greater in amplitude because our reflexes almost overreact to control the movement once it's already happened. So if we have time to plan, what happens, the response is lower because our body has time to sort of make online sort of corrections and changes as the impact is unfolding. So it can kind of stagger the response, if you will. But when we don't know that a perturbation is coming, it's much riskier. So often when athletes get tackled, they see it coming, they know it's going to happen, and they can prepare themselves for it. But very often as well, they don't. They're running along with the ball and have no idea that somebody's bearing down on them. And those types of tackles typically are where we see, you know, higher risk because they're unprepared for that kind of impact.
Thanks, Melanie. Melanie Bussey runs the Motion Analysis Research Lab at the University of Otago. We also heard from student Jaden Pinfold and willing student volunteer Lorenz Kissling. I'm Alison Balance, and this Our Changing World podcast first aired on RNZ on the 27th of September 2018. If you'd like to know more, head to our webpage, rnz.co.nz/ourchangingworld, where you'll find photos and useful links along with all our stories going back 13 years. That should fill in a few hours. Now, if you listen to this podcast outside New Zealand, you may not have heard about our big celebration last week, marking 125 years since New Zealand women won the right to vote. We were the first country in the world with universal suffrage, and we are very proud of that. Sonia Sly is producing a great RNZ suffrage podcast called Beyond Kate. Kate Shepherd being the leader of the suffragists who fought for women's right to vote. Beyond Kate explores 125 years of women's suffrage in New Zealand and the challenges that women face in a society where the rules continue to shift. You can find Beyond Kate on your favourite podcast provider, where you'll also find us. We are on Twitter and Facebook as RNZ Science, and I'll post a link to the Beyond Kate podcast there as well. Thanks for your company. Bye for now. Mā te wā.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.